This is JimBinbo.com e-news number 283, the 23rd of June 2010. This e-news is read by JimBinbo's text-to-speech robot Jimbo, or Jimbot, if you prefer. As usual, there are 5 items, and 3 feedbacks in this issue of e-news. Item 1. Honeywell's Metricon deal. Metricon has long boasted that it is the world's largest OPC supplier. But its recent acquisition by Honeywell mentions everything except OPC. One wonders why. Metricon's revenues are approximately $80 million, and the $140 million acquisition is for about 1.8 times annual revenue. The price is a hefty 60 times earnings, and almost 2 times revenue, a premium of about 20%. That's a hefty price for business with 60 to 70% service revenues. Back to the missing OPC mention. Honeywell is the only automation major to not fully implement the OPC classic specification. They offer their own proprietary and compatible implementation, which Metricon sees as shit because they were replacing so much of it. For the OPC reason alone, the acquisition should be good news for Honeywell users. But why hide OPC in the announcements? Metricon's largest stockholder, founder, and CEO Nizar Samji owns about 30%, and he is clearly ready to sell the company and make his exit. Most Metricon people had no idea that the company was for sale. But the signs were there. Clearly Nizar had no succession plan, and no interest in managing his company to the next level. Always a dynamic negotiator, he sold Metricon with his usual flair for a quick, good deal. The sale, his third as a serial entrepreneur, will give him about $50 million and additional liquidity to pursue other interests. At about 50, he likely wants to focus on the booming Edmonton real estate market and his other entrepreneurial activities. Item 2. Invented in India. In this new era of globalization, nations and regions are engaged in a war of ideas and innovation in the pursuit of wealth. Whoever makes things better, cheaper, faster will win. It takes innovative thinking to stay ahead. China is already the world's largest manufacturer of consumer goods. New Chinese innovations are already brewing, fueled by their burgeoning, motivated, and upwardly mobile middle class. In the short-sighted drive for short-term profits, American companies are selling off their own proprietary knowledge to China because that is being demanded by the far-sighted Chinese as part of the low price of manufacturing in China. It won't be long before China leapfrogs and responds with their own innovations. They have a clear awareness of the need and are targeting strategic technology arenas. The level of Chinese investment in R&D is expected to overtake that of the US within the next decade. Now even capitalistic American companies have started to invest heavily in Chinese R&D operations. India, already well known for providing low-cost engineering services, is now ramping up in raw R&D. Major automation companies like Honeywell, Rockwell, Emerson, and GE are developing technologies at Indian subsidiaries. Indian software development companies like Infosys, Wipro, and others are now shifting their focus to their own innovations. Many international startups are now using Indian development teams in their business plans. Success begets success, and before long, India too will start selling their innovations to America, Europe, and the rest of the world. 300 years ago, China and India represented over 50% of the world's wealth. Today they are now re-emerging as world leaders. While the West continues to languish, China and India, or Chindia as some call the two neighboring countries, continue to grow at annual rates of about 10%. Representing 40% of the world's population, they will, within another 30 to 40 years, clearly rank number 2 and number 3 after the USA in the world GDP rankings. Their own innovations will lead the way. Item 3. The Energy Bloom Box. The Bloom Box, a refrigerator-sized power generator made by Silicon Valley startup Bloom Energy, produces emissions-free energy. The power plant in a box has thin fuel cells, which absorb oxygen on one side, and fuel, on the other, to combine within the cell, and create a chemical reaction that produces electricity. There's no need for burning or combustion. Bloom Energy started at the University of Arizona's NASA Mars Space Program, creating technology that could sustain life on Mars. Bloom founder, Dr. K.R. Sridhar, and his team built a device capable of producing air and fuel from electricity and or electricity from air and fuel. In 2001, when their project ended, the team decided to continue their research and start a company with the mission to make clean, reliable, affordable energy for everyone. In 2002, well-known venture capitalists became the first investors. Over the next few years, the technology quickly developed from concept to prototype to product, and the systems became more powerful, more efficient, more reliable, and more economical. In early 2006, Bloom shipped its first 5-kilowatt field trial unit. After 2 years of successful field trials, the first commercial 100-kilowatt products were shipped to Google in July 2008. With an estimated price tag of $700,000, a Bloom box generates about 200 kilowatts, enough electricity to power 100 American homes. The company says it will eventually market handheld units powerful enough to run a single home for $3,000. The power will reportedly be cheaper than that purchased from standard power plants. Is the box as game-changing as its backers believe? Well, as CBS 60 Minutes put it, it may just do to the power plant what the laptop did to the desktop, because it doesn't require a grid. Item 4. Future workforce. Automation, plus offshore workers equipped with technology tools, will continue to move up the food chain, steadily encroaching on higher-paying, higher-skilled jobs. So, where and how will the future workforce be employed? Work in a central place, at a set time, remains only as an old legacy. Technology has brought the freedom and power to access information anywhere, at any time, so that work is becoming untethered from central locations. Technology facilitates flexible schedules. It reduces, or even eliminates, commuting time and related energy costs. Increasingly, work will become integrated with other facets of life, providing more and broader levels of personal satisfaction. In the past, human interaction with face-to-face contact seemed to be the most effective. Today, technology makes people much more effective by providing collaborative communications tools. Communication patterns are changing quickly. Asynchronous email provides improved thinking styles, deliberate instead of spontaneous response, with automatic documentation of discussion threads. The convergence of several trends, declining births, retiring baby boomers, and expected business growth will create more jobs, and there will be workers to fill them. The problem will be exacerbated by the shortage of skilled, educated workers. Problems create their own solutions. The future workforce will be global, distributed, collaborative, and connected. Item 5. The attention crisis. In the midst of the greatest information boom ever, a serious and debilitating crisis is occurring in our modern culture. The overwhelming abundance of information is consuming everyone's attention. The sheer wealth of information is creating a poverty of attention. Everyone and everything is competing for attention. TV talking heads, visual and audio advertising, YouTube videos, emails, and blogs, media outlets, games and apps on cell phones, children, parents, blogs, friends, airlines, traffic of all kinds. The average adult sees 1,000 advertisements a day. Internet users spend 33 hours per week online, and about 16 hours watching TV. Teens have what is called concurrent media exposure, using various types of media simultaneously. As we become more skilled at handling distractions, the wiring of our brains will inevitably change to deal more efficiently with the excess of information. Neuroscientists speculate that the human brain might be changing faster today, and it has since the prehistoric discovery of tools. Kids growing up now might have an associative genius that adults don't. They might be able to engage in seeming contradictions. Mindful web surfing, focused twittering, and the like. Maybe they'll even manage to attain a paradoxical focus distraction. As usual, there are 3 feedback items in this issue of E-News. Feedback 1. Ilko van der Weyl compares German and American manufacturing productivity. He writes, I live in the Netherlands, do business, and have a lot of contact with German-speaking countries. I see several issues that support the vision that effective manufacturing generates prosperity. In Germany, the wages on average are not low. Germany is a machine exporting country, and German equipment is used widely because of efficiency and functionality, with a high level of innovation, which comes from good engineers. An important item is the appreciation of the engineer, both socially as well as in wages. In Europe, an engineer is well accepted and respected, far beyond the nerd issues that the US media makes fun of. I just returned from the Hanover Fair. While it is not as big as it used to be, you see a lot of initiatives to involve youth in technical schools and jobs. Issues like Tech2U bring young people in by busloads. And special events, like robot soccer games, are organized for them. Even operators and maintenance people in Europe are much higher qualified than in the USA, which first makes you think that would increase production costs. But they don't. They just make better cars. Feedback 2. Sally Ann Offner comments on the shift of manufacturing to China. Says Sally Ann, "Of course it makes sense for a globally operating company to have a strong presence in a country such as China, with its huge market. But we are shipping the incremental innovations and productivity improvements away from our own large marketplace. It is unsustainable, as people such as Bill Ford and Jeffrey Immelt have stated many times. Because services are fungible in nearly all cases, we are going to see a huge drop in US market potential in the coming decades. It's too bad, and it should be stopped." Feedback 3. John Carver has these suggestions regarding our discussion on tools for improving memory. John writes, "Mnemonics and that sort of thing are useful. But if you have some really heavy-duty memorizing to do, you need something with a bit more muscle. I decided to learn French 4 years ago to show my French colleagues that we Brits are not totally useless at languages. A major plank in my strategy was to memorize vocabulary. For this I used a package called SuperMemo. It works on the principle that the only way to get something into long-term memory is to recall it from a short-term memory before you forget it. It is an exponential process in that you recall it when you wish. I used to do this at school using bits of paper with SuperMemo. I needed to spend only about 5 minutes every day to service a vocabulary of about 6,000 words. Well, that's this issue of e-news. Please send us your feedback. Tell Jim how you like me, his Jimbot text-to-speech robot. Send your email to jim@jimbinbo.com. Thank you."